Alright, so holding at the bottom of Yod Amud Beis, second line from the bottom. We started learning yesterday, the Gemara had started mentioning various Amoroyim that had sifters, they had a pasuk that they would use to open up, to give you a new insight into the Megillah. A pasuk from someplace in Tanakh, which gives you an insight into the story of the Megillah, and then use that as an opening for their drasha on the story of Purim. So another one, Rabba bar Ulfran Pasach la Pitzcha Mahai Parshas Mehacha. Pasuk says, one of you, Yahweh's Nevuah, the Samti Kisi be'Elam, I will place my throne in Elam. Elam is a province of Persia. It's a province of Persia. It's a province where Shushan is located. V'havati Misham Melech Pesarim, and I will destroy from there the king and the princes. We find that a king and princes were destroyed in Elam. Melech du Vashti, the word Melech refers to Vashti. She's not a king, but she's the wife of a king. She's the granddaughter of the daughter of kings, because she's descended from Belshazzar, as we learned yesterday. The Sarim, the Haman Vaseras Bonav, and the Sarim that are going to be destroyed refers to Haman and his 10 sons. Another one, Rav Dim. So this pasuk gives us an introduction into the Megillah. You understand from this pasuk that the whole story over there was predicted in advance by the Navi. That there's going to come a time when in Elam, the Eivishka is going to destroy the last vestiges of the kingdom of Babel in the form of Vashti, and the last vestiges of Amalek in the form of Haman and the Ten Tons.
So is that have also implications for this?
Does what happens? I mean, everything in Torah that was written, as the Gemara is going to say later on, Daf Yudalot, any divorce that we have are meant for all time. They weren't just a one-time thing. Yeah.
Exactly.
So you're asking, is this going to happen again in the future? In the exact way? I don't know.
But there's going to be a war between Babel and Paris.
Yeah, but, is it going to be exactly
it's
the same thing?
Exactly.
Whatever, but maybe.
And a lot of these things, I've been trying to sound that some things on the prophecy of that brother will be against brother in a way that is going on right now.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, we can't say for sure, but right. We can say that there's indication of
what's
going on.
All right. Onward. Rav Dimi by Yitzchak Pasach La Pitzcha L'Hai Parshas Mehacha. Pasuk says in Ezra, in Sefer Ezra you have, he's being told that the Jewish people are the big problem of intermarriage, etc. So he says a whole long tefillah and vidri to the Eivishter, you've done something good for us, and look what we're doing in return. He says ki avodim anachnu, because we are servants, we're subjugated to the kings of Persia. Uva abdusenu layazavanu alakenu, but even in our servitude, the Eivishter has not abandoned us. Vayet aleinu chesed lifnei malchei paras, and he extended chesed to us in front of the kings of Paras. And the pasuk continues, actually, the Gemara doesn't quote the rest of the pasuk, but the next words in the pasuk are losis lonu michya, to give us a life, to give us life. Amosite, when did this happen? Bizman Haman, in the time of Haman, when before Achashverosh hated the Jewish people, as we're going to have later on, but then the Eivishter caused that he has chesed to the Jewish people, and losis lonu michya, gave us back our life. Another one, Rav Chanina bar Papa Pasach LaPischa LaHav B'ha Parshas Mehacha, Pasach and Tillim, Hirkavta Enish L'Rashenu, you've made people wide on our heads, Bono Va'esh V'mayim, and we've come through fire and water. And the Pasach continues, V'chaitzienu L'Ravaya, you brought us out into, the literal meaning of Ravaya means like plenty of room. The Gemara is going to darshan, Marshar explains that the Gemara is darshaning the word Ravaya as literally meaning like being drunk.
Yeah.
So what does this mean? But Eish b'meimin Nebuchadnezzar, we went through fire in the time of Nebuchadnezzar. Rashi says, because Nebuchadnezzar threw Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah into the fire. Marshal says, because he burned the Beis Mikdash in fire. Uvamayim b'mei Pare, we went through water in the time of Pare, where he tried to drown the Jewish babies. V'tayitzien, Lord Ravoya b'mei Haman, and he brought us out into comfortableness, into drinking b'mei Haman, because Marshal points out the whole mess of Purim happened through drinking. The original Mishteh where Vashti was killed, the later Mishteh where they made their plot, etc. The whole Megillah Esther is a bunch of feasts, one after the other, which is one reason why you have a mitzvah to drink on Purim. So this pasuk represents the idea that we've always been attacked by one or another enemy, and the most ultimate one was Haman. Yeah. Another one, Rav Yochanan Pasach LaPischa LaHa Parshas Me'acha. The pasuk says, also in Tehillim, Zachar chastev emunasi lebeit Yisrael. Hashem has remembered His kindness and His reliability to the house of Yisrael. Ro kolach te'aretz et Yeshua selekenu. All the ends of the earth saw how Hashem saved us. Amosai ro kolach te'aretz. No, so that's what we're explaining. Amosai ro kolach te'aretz et Yeshua selekenu. When can you say that all the ends of the earth saw that Hashem saved us? B'mei Mordechai v'Esther. Because Rashi says they sent out the letters about it throughout the whole known world. We're going to say later at the bottom of the Amud that Achashverosh is one of the kings who ruled over the whole known world. So the letters went out to everywhere, and everybody knew what had happened. Yeah, and Marshall says slightly differently. I mean, it's not just a matter of the letter. Achashverosh ruled over all those provinces. He ruled over the whole known world. So therefore, yeah, everybody in his empire, which is the whole known world, knew about the nest that had happened.
I thought I remember when
We'll get to when we get to the bottom of the Yamad when we talk about Achashverosh's kingdom. We'll talk about that a little. One of the Beforshim points out also the expression is Leveis Yisrael, where we find in many places that Beis Yisrael means the women, because here the Nest of Purim happens specifically in the course of Esther. So therefore, it's very appropriate the pasuk in Zachar Chastav Emunase how Leveis Yisrael because of Esther, and through that Ro Kolach Te'aretz Es Yisrael Selekenu. Rish Lakish Pasuk Lapischa Laha Parshas Mehacha, Pasuk in Mishlei, that's Arin Noheim, a roaring lion, V'dov Shokek, and a greedy bear, Moshe Rosha Al Amdal, is like a wicked ruler over a poor people. The simple meaning of the Pasuk is like rapacious and voracious as a lion or a bear. That's what a wicked ruler is like to his people. What is this? What's the point of the two comparisons to a lion and a bear? Arizoy and Noyhem and Nebuchadnezzar are Russia. The roaring lion refers to Nebuchadnezzar. Yumio describes him, a lion has come up out of his hedges, out of his thicket, out of his forest.
The Jewish people
also compared to a lion. Yeah, there's the Abish is also compared to a lion. There's the famous Medrash that Rabbi used to quote all the time that says that the lion came in the month of the lion, which is Chodesh Av, and destroyed the Beis Hamikdash, which is called a lion, Ariel. Almanas Shayava Ari, that the Abish was called an Ariel, should come also in the month of Av, also in the month of the Ari, and build the Beis Hamikdash that's called Ariel. So there is that idea, but we're saying, and in terms of this,
So this is more of a negative way of
Yeah. There's different ways you can... Yeah. The greedy bear, this is Achashverosh. The pasuk describes, and Daniel sees a vision of the four beasts representing the four Malchias, Bavel, Paros, Madai, Greece, and Rome. He sees, V'aru cheva achre tinyana, and behold, there's another animal, the second one, Damiel Adob, which resembles a bear. V'tani Rabbi Yosef, and Rabbi Yosef teaches on this in a braita, Eilu Parasim, this refers to the Persians, Sha'ochlin v'shoisim kadov, they eat and drink hungrily like bears, U'mesubolin v'asa kadov, and they're fat and overgrown like bears, U'megadlin seir kadov, and they grow their hair long like bears, V'einlan menucha kadov, and they're restless like bears. We learned in Yuma, in fact, that the Malach, every nation in the world has a Malach, has a sire in Shemayim. We learned in Yuma that the sire of Parak is called Dubiel, the bear of Hashem, because the nation are like bears. So therefore, so the Ari Shoykik is in Nebuchadnezzar, the Ari Noyem is in Nebuchadnezzar, the Dove Shoykik is Achashverosh, and when the pasuk continues, Moshe Rosha Zehaman, the wicked ruler, refers to Haman, Al Amdal, over a poor people, Eli Yisrael, Shem Dalim and Emetus, this refers to the Jewish people, who at that time were poor in mitzvahs, as we're going to have later when we get to Haman's discussion with Achashverosh about the Jews, Yeshna Yam Echad, Yoshna Vinam mitzvahs. They were asleep from doing mitzvahs. So at that time, they were poor and deficient in mitzvahs, and that's why this was able to happen. Until they did tefillah. Rabbi Loza Pasuch Lapischa Laha Parshasa Mehacha, a pasuk in Kehelas, Ba'al Tzaltayim Yimach HaMakara, through laziness, the Makara, which the simple meaning of Makara means the Meloshim Kora, the roof beams, Yimach become a sag, over shiftless sedaim yidlef abayas, and because of laziness of hand, the house leaks. Simple meaning is, you know, plus you have a person who doesn't work on maintaining his house, so the roof beams sag in and the roof starts leaking. The Gemara darshens b'shvil atzlus for ha'yil lahem Yisrael, because of the laziness that the Jewish people had, shalai ofk b'torah, that they did not involve themselves in learning Torah, not the sonah shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu mach, the enemy of the Eivishter, euphemism meaning the Eivishter, means the Eivishter, but the Gemara doesn't want to say, in such terms became mach, became poor, so to speak, like the Eivishter doesn't have, they acted like he doesn't have the ability to save them. Sonei Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a euphemism. It means Hashem himself. But just like throughout Shas, we always have Sonei Shal Yisrael whenever the Gemara wants to say anything negative about the Jewish people. The same thing over here. When you're using the word moch, which means like doesn't have the resources, and we use Sonei Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu instead of saying Hashem himself. We quoted this pasuk, and we had a similar kind of thing in Tanis, talking about that because Jewish people don't learn Torah, therefore rain doesn't fall. Ve'en moch ela. We did. In Tanis, yeah, we did. Ve'en moch ela ani, the word moch means a poor person, like who doesn't have resources. As the pasuk says, a person is too poor to pay his erech. He promised to give the Beis HaMikdash a certain amount of money, and now he can't afford it. Ve'en makara ela kadosh baruch hu, and the word makara, the one who makes the beams, refers to Hashem. Shenema hamakara b'mayim al yosef, as it says, the Eivishter who makes his roof, who makes his upper chamber's roof with water. The water that's above the Shemayim. So therefore, it comes the connection in particular. Mefarshim say that we're going. It's not just talking about how things were in the times of Haman, although there is that also. It goes all the way back to the original time the Jewish people tangled with Amalek by Yavai Amalek. Why? Because they were in Rephidim, Shirafu Yudeim in Atzera, because they their hands slackened from learning Torah.
Rough is
rough means like slack it, like slack. Yeah. Next one. Rav Yitzchak Nachman Yitzchak Pasach La Pitzchak La Parshas Mehacha Pasach and Tilim Shira Malos Lulei Hashem Shehayalanu Yoyman Yisrael. If it weren't for Hashem who was with us, so should Yisrael say Lulei Hashem Shehayalanu. If it weren't for Hashem who was with us, Bekum Aleinu Adam. When a man stands up against us, who else is the man? What do you mean, Bekum Aleinu Adam? Who else stands up against the Jewish people if not men? It means Adam Vole Melech. The Pasuk is saying it means it was a regular person, not a king. So therefore, the pasuk is referring to the story where Haman rose up against the Jewish people. What's the point? What's the significance of saying that he was Adam Vloy Melech? A couple of different explanations. One of them is that Marsha says is that a king, if it had been a king, the Gzeira might not have been so severe. A king wants to have a people to rule over. Ein Melech Vloyam. If nothing else, he wants to be able to collect taxes from them, whatever. So if it had just been up to Achashverosh, yeah, he hated the Jewish people, as the Gemara is going to say later, but he wouldn't have on his own issued an order to wipe out the whole people. Whereas Haman, who is not the king, Haman is the prime minister, he had no compunctions about it.
I think Haman, Adam.
What do you mean? He is an Adam. He was a human being. He was a Rasha, but... No, Adam Kareem Adam, you're thinking of, there's different places where it talks about Adam versus Ha-Adam, whatever. I mean, he was an important person. He was a Rasha, but he was a person of importance. But he wasn't a Melech, because one idea is that makes the nest all the greater. That if it was a Melech, okay, so he signs a decree like that, and the next morning he wakes up and says, wait a minute, what am I doing? I'm going to deprive myself of revenue. Whereas Haman didn't have any such compunction, so therefore the nest is all the greater. Another idea that some Mefarshim say is, we know Leib Melachim Besarim Biyad Hashem. So if he had been a king, Adarabah, then fine, Eivishter controls what he's doing. Whereas he's not a king, so therefore, like he has a little more Bechirah Chavshis, like. Rava Pasuk L'Pitzchah L'Ha Parshas Mehacha. Pasuk in, where is this? In Mishlei. Bevois Tzadikim Yismach Ha'am. When there's many Tzadikim, or when the Tzadikim are great, the people are happy. Over Mishal Rasha, and when the Rasha is ruling, Yenach Ha'am, then the people sigh. What does this mean? Bevois Tzadikim Yismach Ha'am Zemorachai Esther. When there's many Tzadikim, when the Tzadikim are powerful, then the people are happy. This refers to when Mordechai and Esther are in charge. The whole city of Shushan, the Pashtus, meaning the Goyim as well, were happy and rejoicing. When a Russia is ruling, the people are sighing. It says the whole city of Shushan was confused, was upset. Rav Masna Amameha. Moshel, when Mishael Russia, when the Russia ruled,
the ruling
in the rulership, of the Russia, yeah. Rav Masna Amame Hacha. Rav Masna says here is a pasuk that's an appropriate psichta to Megillah Esther. The pasuk says Kimi Goy Gadol Ashaloy Lekim Krevim Elav. What great nation is there that has Hashem so close to them? The pasuk continues Kashem Alekenu B'chol Koreinu Elav. As Hashem is close to us whenever we call out to Him. Which encapsulates the whole story of the Megillah. Haman is claiming that the Jewish people are far from Hashem, and therefore he can do to them whatever they want. It turns out that no, they're close to Hashem. They did tshuva, and they called out to Hashem, and Hashem answered them. The Rambam, in fact, writes that in the introduction to Yad HaChazakah that it's from this source that we have. That it's from that pasuk that we have the concept of the Yom Tovim of Hanukkah and Purim. Why did the Chum establish those Yom Tovim to demonstrate what the pasuk is saying? That we have Hashem who's constantly close to us whenever we call out, as we did at those times in Hanukkah and in Purim, and the Eibishter helps us.
So, to answer your question, maybe what happened? Sorry.
It's a question. We don't know the answer, and we don't know the answer, and as Zeba said many times, it's not our job to make excuses for Hashem. But, so, that's it. We don't know the answer.
We'll understand
when Mashiach comes. Yeah.
We learn more about it over time.
Also true, yeah. Ravashi Omame Hocha, Ravashi says here's another pasuk. Oy Hanisa Elikim Ugoimer from the same perek in Devarim in Parshas Vayetzchanan. Has Hashem ever tried, as the pasuk continues, Lakachas Lo Goy Mikerav Goy, to take himself a nation from within a nation, like he did by Yetzias Mitzrayim? But this also is talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim in context over there. But Rav Ashi explains that it's also referring to the story of Purim. That they also had Goy Mikerav Goy. You had one nation scattered among all the other nations, Mefuzo Mefodah Ben Am, and the Eibishter saved us. One thing is Mefarshim point out that there was an idea there that there was the Goy Mikerav Goy, that when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim still stayed a superpower. They lost, you know, a week later they got drowned by the Yamsof, and that was the end of them for a couple hundred years. But at the time, at least, you know, you had Goy, one powerful nation, being extracted Mikerav Goy. Same thing over here with the story of the Megillah. It's not that Eibishter didn't break the power of Achashverosh or the Persian Empire at that time. You know, the empire still continued to exist. And not Akati Anan Abid Achashverosh Anan, as the Gemara says later, we're still servants of Achashverosh. That's why we don't say why the Gemara discusses one reason you don't say Halal on Purim. And yet, with the empire still at the peak of its power, the Eibishter saved the Jewish people. That's the Oyan Nisrael
Elikim. And the same thing will happen to the
Talmud. Yeah. Well, no, because then Taka, the power of the Dalad Malchus is going to be broken. Going back now, so now we went through most of the psichtis. The Gemara is going to do one more, actually. Vayhi b'mei Achashverosh. The pasuk begins. Vayhi b'mei Achashverosh. We said yesterday that Vayhi is Loshen Tsar. So here also, Rab, Vay v'hi. The word vayehi means vay and he. Two expressions of mourning. Hadodichtiv. This is like what it has. The sky mashakatz about Torah because it was fulfilled. What it says in the Torah, v'ismakartem shom lo ivechal avodim l'shvachas ugemer. The pasuk says at the end of the Torah and Parshas Kisavah, you'll try to sell yourselves as slaves and maid servants to the goyim. V'ein koina. And the pasuk says nobody will want to buy you. So the same thing happened over here. Rashi says that actually Haman made a gzera, that no goyim should try to buy Jews as slaves and then try to hide them from the gzera. Other Mephoshim said you didn't even need a gzera from Haman. People themselves said. I think the Medrash says that people themselves said, the goyim themselves said, why should we bother buying you when, you know, in 11 months' time you're going to be killed anyway? So therefore, so that pasuk was actually Niskayim at that time, and that's the vay and the he. The Alter Rebbe says yes. The Alter Rebbe says in Torah Ur that's the Jewish people. We know if we look in the Pesukim in Megillah Esther, they, you know, during that period, from even after Haman was hanged and even after the second letters were sent out, officially it wasn't really that the original Gzeira was rescinded. It's not that the Goyim are now not allowed to kill the Jews. It's just the Jews are given permission to defend themselves. So still throughout that whole year, there's still the fear that the Goyim are going to be able to kill them. And yet the Alter Rebbe makes the point that yeah, they all withstood that with Mesiras Nefesh that entire year, and none of them converted, even though that would have saved them.
To
the Persian religion, yeah. So it's a worship of Zoroastrianism, whatever it is, yeah. And then Kiksav Hashem Yechta B'Shem HaMelech, right? Then it's written in the king's name, officially can't be revoked. So that's why the Mepharshim explained on the Megillah over there that that was why. If you look over there, if you look carefully at the whole discussion there between Mordechai and Esther and the king, you can see that, you know, they had to tread very carefully. Like, you know, we have to be able to counteract this order without actually rescinding it, because the Persian laws don't allow it to actually be rescinded. Any document that's written in the king's name, v'nachdim tabat ha-melech, and sealed with the king's seal, ein lahashiv, cannot be revoked. So that's it. It couldn't be officially...
Nobody can revoke it.
No, the king himself can't revoke it either. That's what he's saying. No. That's why he's saying, v'atim kiswa la-yehudim kateh v'einechem, write about the Jews, whatever is good in your eyes. You still have to make sure that you're not revoking the original order, but you can write in whatever way that you can figure out to bypass it. And that's effectively what they did. If you look in the Pesukim over there, they're, what are they writing? And they're not writing, you're not allowed to kill the Jews. The Jewish people are allowed to gather and defend themselves. The original Gzeira was the Goyim should be ready to kill the Jews, and the Jews are not allowed to defend themselves.
There was a sort of change of...
But the original one was the Goyim are allowed to kill the Jews. The second one is the Goyim still have official permission to do that. You can't counteract that, but the Jews are allowed to defend themselves.
And in the first, they were not allowed?
It didn't say.
Huh.
It was implied, but it didn't actually say in so many words.
It encouraged the Jews to gather together...
Obviously, and I mean, it also encouraged most of the Goyim to leave them alone. It's only the hardcore ones, the 75,000 in the empire, the 800 in Shushan and Haman's 10 sons, that actually went out to war. Yeah, that's the Hamasniks. You know, all the other guys, you know, kind of melted back into the woodwork. Rav Nama or Tzvi Yadim, yeah.
We still want to fight.
Yeah. For Shmuel Amar, here's another pasuk Shmuel says that refers to the events of the Megillah. Loi ma'astim v'loi ga'altim v'chalois, and this is at the end of the Torah in B'chukosai. The Ebishter says that throughout all the Golos, v'afgam zos v'yosim eretzei vehem, he says, loi ma'astim, I've not rejected them, v'loi ga'altim, and I'm not disgusted by them, l'chaloisam, to destroy them, which means, he explains, loi ma'astim b'mei yevonim, I didn't reject them in the times of the yevonim, v'loi ga'altim, and I'm not disgusted by them, b'mei nebuchadnezzar. Or on the side over here, it brings that actually the Nebuchadnezzar is really a change from the censor. It's really supposed to be Aspasianus, the Roman emperor. L'chaloisam mimei Haman, that I wasn't going to destroy them, meaning in the time of Haman. L'chofe brisi itam, that I'm not going to transgress, I'm not going to revoke my covenant with them, is bimei Hanani Mishal Vazaria. Bimei Parsiim. Or again, on the side here, it says that really it should be bimei Roimiim in the times of the Romans. I am Hashem their God, meaning even the times of Gog u'Magog. So the pasuk is telling us that throughout every golos that the Jewish people are going to go through, the Eved is just saying, I'll always be with them. And one of those times is Bimei Haman, that the L'chaloisam didn't happen.
So that was one of
our ones? Yeah, okay. Why is it out of order? I don't know. The next braisa is actually going to put them in order, but... You could answer, I guess, that maybe it's going nakala la covered, like the Greek one in a way is like the least worst of them, because the Jewish people are threatened spiritually but not physically. The Aspasianus is the next worst one, etc. You know, it could be that's going like from the least worst to the absolute worst. Yeah. Anyway, you don't have an aleph in the middle. In a braisa, we learn a little differently. Loi ma'astim, when it says I didn't reject them, means we make castim, means in the times of the Babylonians. Shemati lahem Baniel, Hanani, Mishael, Azalia, that the Ebishter set up Baniel and Hanani, Mishael, and Azalia, who not only are tzaddikim, that they protect the Jewish people with their tzidkus, but also they had high positions at court, so they're able to protect the Jewish people politically. But like Alti me Yevonim, and I wasn't disgusted by them, means in the times of the Yevonim, Shematilahem Shimon Atzadik, that I set up for them Shimon Atzadik, whereas we learned the famous story in Yoma of him meeting with Alexander the Great, Bachashminoi Yevonim Matisya Kohen Gadol. And later on, Chashminoi and his sons and Matisyahu the Kohen Gadol. How is it where it seems that the Gemara seems to be saying over here, by the way, that Chashminoi and Matisyahu are different people? There's a lot of ink been spilled on that question, whether the Gemara actually means that, or whether the Girsa should be different, or whether there are Midrashim and then various other sources that do taka seem to indicate that Chashminoi and Matisyahu are taka two different people. Even we say in davening, Mimei Matisyahu Kohen Gadol Chashminoi Yevonim, one way of explaining it is it means in the days of Matisyahu Kohen Gadol, as well as the days of Chashminoi and his sons, or it could be the Chashmina, you know, the title or nickname or whatever, Matasyahu. Anyway. L'chaloitzem bimei Haman, when it says that I wasn't going to destroy, that means in the times of Haman, she'amadti l'ha Mordechai v'Esther, that I set up Mordechai and Esther to save him. L'hafer b'risi itam, the Ebishter continues that I wasn't going to reject my covenant, I wasn't going to revoke my covenant with them, means bimei Parasiyim, or again on the side here it says really it's supposed to be bimei Romiyim, in the times of the Romans. She'amadti l'ha Mordechai v'Rebbi v'chach me'dordas, that I set up for them the family of Rebbi, the Nasiyim, and the Chachamim of all the later generations, well, protect the Jewish people. And when it says, because I am Hashem their God, means v'asid love, it means in the future, in Mashiach times, that then at that point, no nation or no other people of any speakers of any other language will be able to control the Jewish people anymore. So either way, the pasuk is referring to the different Goliaths and how Hashem saves us in each one of them. There's a long explanation that Maharal has how each of these leaders that we're mentioning over here help counteract one of the Averis for which the Golos happened. For example, the first Beis Mikdash we know was destroyed because of Avodah Zarah Gilarayis Shvichas Damim. So Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, Azariah took care of the Avodah Zarah problem by not bowing down to Nebuchadnezzar's Tzelem, so that helped against that. Esther was particularly careful about Tzniut, because we're going to learn later, so that took care of the Gilarayis issue. And so on and so forth. That each one of them counteracts one of these things, and therefore helps be mechaper for that avera. Obviously, right. I mean, we mean that Hashem protects that the Jewish people continue to exist.
The Churban was, but
the Jewish people were saved. As the Medrash puts it, so to speak, like the Eved poured out his anger on the stones and the wood of the Beis Mikdash, and yeah.
I was asking about
this. Yeah. These are things we don't really know the answer to. It's, you know. Rav Levi Amar Mehacha, Rav Levi says, here is a pasuk that gives us an insight into the Megillah. The pasuk says, it's in this week's parasha, actually, Vim loitza rishu es yoshvei aret, if you don't dispossess the inhabitants of the land, then they're going to harass you. What does this mean? This is going back to how do the Jewish people come to be in a situation where they're tangling with Haman, because those hundreds of years before, Shaul didn't get rid of Amalek. Rav Chiya Amar Mehacha, the pasuk continues, V'hoya kasha dimisi lasis lahem etzalachem. It'll be, if you don't get rid of them, that as I plan to do to them, so I'll plan to do to you. Well, here we have that in the times of Haman, the Jewish people came the closest to. Next, going back to the actual words of the Megillah, Achashverosh. Why is he called that? I mean, the obvious answer you'd say is called that because that's what his parents named him, right? You know, I mean, it has a meaning in Persian or whatever. But as usual, the Gemara wants the Darshan name. Yeah.
Was the beginning of slave, right?
We'll talk about that as we go. Not Dabke, but no, we're gonna get to soon actually that he wasn't necessarily of royal birth. We'll get to that soon. But he loved Dabke. He was a slave. Yeah, Vashti called him. Vashti made fun of him and she said, "You're like my father. You were my father's stable boy." But loved Dabke, she meant that literally. Relax. We'll get there. Yeah. So why is he called Achashverosh? Amar Rav. Achiv Shal Roish, because he's the brother of the Roish, of the head, Uven Gilo Shal Roish, and he's of the same nature, he has the same mazel as the Roish. Who is the Roish? Achiv Shal Roish means Achiv Shal Nebuchadnezzar HaRasha. He's like a brother to the wicked Nebuchadnezzar, not literally a brother, of course, they're from different nations and all, but in other words, he's the same kind of person. You know, the Gemara wants to point out over here, you know, when you read the Megillah on a surface level, you know, it seems, I mean, you know, the Gemara's going to talk about later, he was a Melech Tipish, Melech Pekeach, or whatever, you know, it doesn't seem, in a way, he doesn't seem like such a bad guy. It looks like, you know, he can be led around by the nose by everybody, you know, he's first led around by Haman, later on he's led around by Mordechai. He doesn't come out as such a bad guy, but the Gemara's explaining over here, no, he was just as bad in his own way as the Nebuchadnezzar. He's Achim Shodosh. Why? And Nebuchadnezzar, Shenikra Rosh. Nebuchadnezzar is called in the pasuk metaphorically. He's called the head. Shenema Anturesha Didava. Daniel was explaining to Nebuchadnezzar the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had seen this dream of a statue that gets knocked down, etc. The head of the statue is made out of gold, and Daniel tells him, "You are the head of gold." So therefore, Nebuchadnezzar can be called the head. And we're saying Achashverosh is like the brother Achiv of the Rosh of the head. Then Gilo Shorosh, and how is he of the same nature as the Rosh? Consider, who harag, who bikesh larag? Nebuchadnezzar killed many Jews. Achashverosh wanted to. Who hechriv? Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the Beis Mikdash. Who bikesh lahechriv? Achashverosh tried to destroy, to prevent, not just to prevent. Rashi says they had already, when Achashverosh became king, they had already laid the foundations of the second Beis Hamikdash, as we learned 2 days ago. Achashverosh stopped that work. He would have wanted to have them rip out the whole thing. So he wanted to destroy whatever had been built so far. As it says, in the kingdom of Achashverosh, the beginning of his reign, the Kosim wrote false accusations against the people of Yehuda and Yerushalayim, and Achashverosh accepted them and stopped the building. Sitna means like a hatred. Vayikra Shmo Sitna from Parshat Toldos. Sitna means hatred, like hateful letters. Yeah, it's talking about over there in context, it's talking about the Kosim, yeah. So that's one reason why it's called Achashverosh. Ushmuel Amar, another reason. In his time, the Jewish people's faces became black like the bottom of a pot from the Tzaris. Or some before Hashem say, from the fasting. We learn in the Megillah that they had to fast for 3 days, and a person fasts, their face becomes black and dark from hunger. Anybody who mentions Achashverosh says och to his head. What does that mean? Rashi says och is maloshen oi, woe to his head. Marsha says that och can also mean a curse on his head. The Medrash puts it a little bit differently. The Medrash or one of the Mepharshim or whatever says that it's also maloshen chashroish, which means a headache. Like a person could get a headache trying to figure out how to manage under Achashverosh's rule. But of Chanina Amar, another reason, Shakol Natsu Rosh in Vyamav. The word Achashverosh means that everybody became Rosh, poor in his time. Shanama, it says at the end of the Megillah, by Yosem HaMelech Achashverosh Mas, that Achashverosh put taxes on the kingdom, so everybody became poor from the taxes.
That hasn't changed.
Yeah.
That hasn't changed.
Next, the pasuk says, Hu Achashverosh. So what the Hu Achashverosh means? Hu Berusha B'Tchilot Tzavat Seifa means he was the same Rosha from beginning to end. Again, even though by the end of the Megillah he looks like a decent chap, no, he was still the same Rosha throughout. He moderated what he was doing, because he's not being led around by Haman anymore, but he was still the same. He was still the same Rosha.
Very much like a bear, because
yeah.
He's the dancing bears.
Yeah. Another similarly, we have other psukim that do the same kind of thing. Hu Esav. Hu Esav Aviyadim means Hu Berushim. It's Chalotz Vat Seifim. It means it was the same Rasha from beginning to end. Hu Dotsen Vaviyadim. Hen Berushim. It's Chalotz Vat Seifim. Hu HaMelech Achaz. Again, Hu Berushim. It's Chalotz Vat Seifim. Achaz, the king that we learned about the other day, that he closed up all the Batei Medrash and all, he was the same Rasha from beginning to end. On the other hand, for good also, when the pasuk says Avram Hu Avraham, means Hu Betzidkim. It's Chalotz Vat Seifim. Meaning he was the same Tzaddik from beginning to end. Which actually is an interesting point, because the Rambam describes we all know the famous story of how Avram discovered the Eibishter. The Rambam writes that until Avram discovered it, he was worshiping the various natural beings just like everybody else. He didn't know it. He didn't know. Eventually, he figured out it can't be the sun, it can't be the moon, or whatever. But meanwhile, later on, the Medrash says that actually Avram felt bad about it. I started out as an Eibishter of a Zara. And Eibishter tells him, don't worry, L'chol tal yal d'secha. You have like a freshness of youth. You're like a newborn person. So in that sense, we're saying Avram, who b'tzidkem, it's Chalotz Vat Seifa, we still consider him the same tzaddik from beginning to end.
Because his change was so profound.
Similarly, when the pasuk says Hu Aaron Moshe, also means Hain b'tzidkem, it's Chalotz Vat Seifa, means they're the same tzaddikim from beginning to end. And when it says V'David Hu Hakatan, it says David, he is the small one. Again, the Hu means Hu B'katnusim, it's Chalotz Vat Seifa, means he considered himself small the same way from beginning to end. Just like when he was younger, he made himself small in front of somebody who was greater than him in Torah. We learned all the way back at the beginning of Brachas, the Gemara discussed over there, about his teacher Mephibosheth, either Yonason's brother or son, as the case may be, whatever, who was his Rebbe in Torah. And we learned over there how David was very humble in front of him. He'd always, whenever he passed him something in Halacha, Mephibosheth, did I do right or wrong? This is before he became king. So same thing when he became king, he made himself small in front of somebody who's greater than him in Chachma. Like we're going to pick it up. If you learn two things from Achitofel, and he calls him Rabbi Alok from Yadai. So that's the Hu, Achashverosh. Next, Hamoylech, what does that mean? Hamoylech means that he rules. Now, usually the expression in the pasuk would be something like, first of all, it doesn't introduce him as king. It doesn't say, Bahibi meha melech achashverosh. And second of all, hamoylech implies like the one who became king, like as if it was unexpected. So what does that mean? Omar Rav shemolech me'atma. So Rav says it means that he became king on his own. He did not legitimately succeed to the kingship. So, Amri lo l'shvach, Amri lo l'gnai. Some say that this is meant in praise of him. Some say that it's meant to tell us bad about him.
Destroy the previous king?
No, wait. We'll talk about, actually, we'll get to the order of the kings soon on other days. The Gemara is going to present the whole chronology. But no, he didn't kill or anything the previous king. One second. So Amri lo l'shvach, the lehava inish t'choshev l'malka kavasei. Some say that it's for his praise. There was no one else who was as suitable to be king as him. So even though he wasn't the normal expected successor, and actually in secular history also, they have a lot of historians claim that the Ahasuerus from the Megillah is Xerxes the First, that was known from Greek history. Greek history tells us that actually the Xerxes wasn't his father's oldest son. He was like the second or third son or whatever, but he was the most capable, so he became king. So then, according to that, that's what the Gemara might be saying. Now, Rashi actually puts it a little differently. Rashi says that according to this, it means Shalahoya Mizera Amalucha. He wasn't from the royal family B'chlal, but they appointed him as we're going to say now. So according to that, it might be Taka. He wasn't related to the previous king, but whatever. There's different possibilities. But no, not that he overthrew the previous king or whatever. No, it's just, either that they made him king because he's the most capable, or the other way around. Others say that it meant in a derogatory thing, so they have a chazul amachot, so that really he wasn't suitable to be king at all. Or mamoni yaseder who diyo become. He paid a lot of money to the people who are in charge of appointing kings, and so they appointed him. The Medrash describes how Ahasuerus found a huge, when there were a number of treasures that Bahanetsa had hidden away, and Ahasuerus found one of them, so therefore he had a lot of money to bankroll his political campaign. Yeah. Next, the Pasuk says he ruled Mehodu Vad Kush. What does this mean? Rav and Shmuel argue about what this means. Chad Amar Hodu B'Sofa Olam V'Kush B'Sofa Olam. One says that Hodu is at one end of the world and Kush is the other end of the world. The other one says, no, Hodu and Kush are fairly close to each other, and it means, Kishem Shemolach al Hodu and Kush, just as easily as he can rule over Hodu and Kush, because they're adjacent countries, Kach Molach Misofa Olam Vad Sofa, so that's how easily he ruled from one end of the world to the other. So what does this mean? A lot of different Mephoshim talk about different possibilities. First of all, there might actually, Hodu is pretty much, everybody agrees, is India. What is Kush? There's Taka two possibilities. Some of Farshim say that there are indeed two places in the world called Kush. Usually we translate Kush as Ethiopia, which is at the other end of the known world of that time from India. On the other hand, Kush can also be the Hindu Kush, the mountains over there between India and Afghanistan. So it really is right next to Hodu. Yeah, so that's one way of looking at it. Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out that when you get down to it, Hodu and Kush are geographically, they're a little distant, but all they have between them is the ocean, the Indian Ocean. So therefore, it's not so far-fetched to say that they're close to each other and they're relatively easy to rule over together. A lot of other possibilities also, including one interesting idea. Some of Farshim say the world is round. So if Hodu and Kush are next to each other, one way of looking at it is they're next to each other. The other way of looking at it is they have the whole world between them. And he ruled over the whole way. He ruled over from Hodu going this way all the way around to Kush.
Based on the thing that Kush is next to Hodu,
that's the point, that as easy as it is to rule over both Hodu and Kush, that's how easily he ruled over the whole world. That I've once pointed out in a sikha that we find in a number of places in Shas where Rav and Shmuel have this kind of argument, whether you look at the individual word or whether you look at the context. We don't know which one is saying which, Rav and Shmuel, the Gemara says Chad Omer and Chad Omer, but one of them looks at the word Ad and says, well, Ad implies there's a distance between them, Hodu until Kush.
Kush is not happening.
According to this, Kush would have to be Ethiopia or Africa or whatever, yeah. According to the other way of looking at it, though, the pasuk continues, Sheva v'Esru Mei Medina, that he ruled over 127 countries, and why would you have to mention that? If Hodu and Kush are at opposite ends of the world, of course he ruled over all the countries in between. So therefore, the other mandama looks at the context and says, since it says Sheva v'Esru Mei Medina, you have to understand the word Ad as meaning non-literally, that it means he ruled over Hodu and Kush, which are next to each other, and by extension, he ruled over the whole rest of the world. A similar kind of thing, you find a different pasuk talking about Shlomo HaMelech. He dominated this whole side of the river. Mitifsach v'ad Aza. Same machlokes. The Gemara has this machlokas elsewhere in Shas also in Sanhedrin. Rav and Shmuel, this is Shlomo HaMelech. Rav and Shmuel have the same argument. Chad Omer Tipsach v'Sofa Olam ba'Aza v'Sofa Olam. One says that Tipsach and Aza are at opposite ends of the known world, so it means that Shlomo ruled over all that area. V'Chad Omer, and the other one says V'Chad Omer Tipsach v'Aza ba'Ad Adoni Habukaimi. The other one says that Tipsach and Aza are right next to each other. And again, K'shem Shemolach al Tipsach v'Aza aval Aza, as easily as he ruled as a person could rule over Tipsach and Aza because they're right next to each other. Kach Molach al Kol Olam Kule. That's how easily he ruled over the whole world. Yes, maybe, but also first that, but also just like there are two Kushes, there may have been two Tifsachs or two Azas. We have a lot of names that are repeated all over the world. Think of how many Springfields there are in America. Next, the pasuk continues, Sheva ve'esru me'e Medina. What does this mean? 7 and 20 and 100. Why is it listing them in increasing order? Amr of Chis, that means B'tchila Malach al Sheva. Originally he ruled over only 7 provinces. All of a sudden, Malach al Esrim. Later on he ruled over 20. All of a sudden, Malach al Me'a, and then over 100. And he gradually increased the size of his kingdom as he went along. That's why. Elamayata, why? Consider a different pasuk arranged in the same way. Ushnei Chaye Amram Sheva v'shloshem Ashana. The years of Amram, it says, were 7 and 30 and 100 years. Again, my Darshas Bey, what kind of Darasha are you going to say there? The Marsha points out, I mean, there's actually other places, there's other people. Mela, when it says Shona by each one, like by Sora, by Yuchaya Sora, Sheva, Shona, Omeyim, then we know there's a drasha about it. By Amram, it doesn't say that. Marsha points out, why is the Gemara asking? Levi, it also says the same thing. Kahos, it says the same thing, 133 years in his case, but okay, why is the Gemara asking from them? One of the Mepharshim answers, one of the later Mepharshim answers, because with Levi and Kahos, we don't find that they were tzaddikim gemurim. You could say, fine, you know, they started out as lesser tzaddikim, and gradually, over time, they developed into greater tzaddikim. Amram, we know, is one of the four people who died for Et Yishol Nachash. He never had any Averis. He only died because of the Chatei Tadat. So therefore, the Gemara is asking about him, what kind of 7 and then 30 and then 100? He stayed the same tzaddik throughout his whole life. The answer is, the Gemara says, Shiny Hachat Kroy Yaseiru. It's different over here. You have to say that the words Sheva Ve'etzra Me'e Medina are meant for a drasha because the words are extra. Mechtik Sid Mahodu Bad Kush, because the Pasuk already said he ruled from Hodu to Kush. Sheva Ve'etzra Me'e Medina Lomeli, what do you need to mention that it was 127 provinces? We know he ruled over the whole known world, like we just said. What do you need to mention how many provinces it was? Shmami Nila Drasha, so it must be that it's meant for a Drasha to tell us that his kingdom expanded as he continued. Tanan Abanam, we learn in a Braisa, Shloshim Molcho B'Kippa. There were three kings who ruled over the Kippa. Rashi says, Tachas Kol Kippa Sarakia, under the whole vault of the heavens. Over the whole known world, in other words. Ve'evu hein, Achav v'Achashverosh v'Nebuchadnezzar. Where do we see this? Achav, Dichtiv, the Pasuk says by Achav, the Pasuk describes over there how Avadia, the Navi, is telling Eliyahu, Eliyahu tells him, go tell Achav, I'm here, I want to see him. Avadia says, do you know that Achav's been looking over the whole world for you? He says, Chei Hashem Alekecha, by the life of Hashem, im yesh goyu mamlacha, that there's not a single nation or kingdom, asher l'sholach adoni shom l'vakesh chavagayim, that my master Achav has not sent to look for you there. And the pasuk continues, v'hishviyah es goyu v'es mamlacha. He made them swear that they haven't seen you. How do you make them swear unless you control them, unless you're their overlord? What? Well, Avadia is swearing in Hashem's name, yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. What he's saying is true. But the context over there is Avadia saying, you're telling me, go tell Achav you're here. What's going to happen? You're going to disappear, and then I'm going to get in trouble. So and Eliyahu tells him, don't worry, I'm not going to disappear. Anyway. If Achav does not rule over all those kingdoms, how could he make them swear? So therefore we see that he ruled over all of them. Yirmiyahu says that any nation or any kingdom that does not put their neck under the yoke of the king of Babel is going to be destroyed. So therefore, Nebuchadnezzar ended up ruling all of them. And Achashverosh had Namor, and Achashverosh ruled over the whole world, like we said. Tosfos points out, what about Alexander the Great? He ruled over the whole known world. And the answer is, the Gemara is only listing the ones that explicitly are named in the pasuk. Alexander lived after Tanakh was finished. He's mentioned in Sefer Daniel, the several of Daniel's visions talk about Alexander the Great and his career and the aftermath and everything, but he never names him by name. That's one idea. Although that one, there's also one of the Mefarshim says, that's Ben Yehoyada, that the Gemara is pointing out over here how each of these kings got to rule over the whole world because of the schus they had. For one schus that they had, they Eibishter paid them back like that. Achav, there's a whole story over there where he was Moser Nefesh for a Sefer Torah. The king of Aram tells him, I'm going to plunder everything from your house. And Achav tells him, what can I do? You're more powerful than me. And then and Hadad says, I'm going to take you to Sefer Torah as well. And Achav puts his foot down and says, I won't let that happen. So in the schutz of that, he got to rule over everyone. Nebuchadnezzar, the Gemara tells in Sanhedrin how he one time ran 3 steps to honor the Eibishter. There was a letter written in a way that Nebuchadnezzar felt wasn't respectful to Hashem. So he ran 3 steps to go bring the guy back. And Achashverosh had this schutz in the schutz that he married Esther.
What?
No, never. We said who we're doing. We said he was the same Rasha from beginning to end. How Esther lives with him, that's another question we'll get to over the next couple of days. But when we get to V'chasher Avati Avati, we'll talk about it. Yeah, when we get to how Esther managed when she was in the harem. It was very difficult. There's I think the Zoyar or something says that there was a shed. Yeah, we'll look at it as the shed.
By the way, that says to us, we marry a Jewish, modest Jewish woman, that we're very right, that's a very big deal.
Okay. Yeah. I call Bishvila Isha, yeah. I mean, next, the Gemara asks. Sivan Shasdach. The Gemara is now going to ask about 4 kings with the initials of them, Shlomo, Sancheirev, Doyavesh, and Koresh, that it seems from Sukkim they also ruled over the whole world. Why aren't they listed? So, Tulek. What? Koresh was before Achashverosh. He was, yeah. So, the Gemara asked for Tulek. You're telling me there were no other kings who ruled over the whole known world? Right? Shlomo. What about Shlomo Malach? The answer is Moisolik Malchuse. He did not finish up his kingship. We know the famous story of Gittin, where he got kicked out off the throne by Ashmedai. So he didn't finish his kingship. Okay, that works out according to the opinion over there in Gittin, that he was first a king and then he was a commoner. He never regained the Gemara says over there he regained his throne, but never to the same extent as before. El Lamandam Melech Vehedya. What? It's a whole long story over there that the Gemara tells that he had Ben Yoyada capture Ashmedai because he was trying to find out where the Shamir is. He had Ashmedai as a prisoner in his palace for a long time. Eventually Ashmedai convinces him to give him his ring and whatever, and he kicks him off the throne and throws him far away, and then Shlomo has to beg his way back to Yerushalayim, basically. It's a long story over there. We'll get to it when we get to that in about a year and a half, as the Shem. So the Gemara has a machlokus over there, whether Shlomo was originally Melech. Then he was a Hediot, then he was a commoner. Did he ever become a king? He became a king again, but did he become a king to the same extent as before? Did he regain his full power from before? Machlokus over there. So Hanichal Manoah Melech the Hediot works out according to the opinion that he was a king and then a commoner, and then when he became king again, he wasn't as powerful as he was before. So fine, then you could say he didn't finish off his kingship. El Amandoma Melech the Hediot the Melech, but if you say he was a king, then a commoner, then a king again, with the same full power over the whole world as before, Michael Beber, then why aren't you listing him? And the answer is, Shlomo Milsach Rizzi have a baby, because Shlomo, there was a different kind of thing about him. He ruled over the higher beings and the lower ones. It actually says that the higher ones means the Shadim. There's a different gears over here. It says on the side that maybe not Hashadim but Hasorim, the Malachim up in Shemayim. Shenemar, the pasuk says, by Yeshiv Shlomo, Al Kisei Hashem. It says Shlomo sat on the throne of Hashem, like so to speak, just as Hashem is king over everything, so to speak, Shlomo was also. So therefore, he's not listed. Either Meforshim say the point is the Gemara is saying his kingship was of a completely different kind than the other ones. The other ones ruled only on earth. Shlomo also ruled over spiritual beings. Or the idea is all the other kings ruled based on conquest, based on military power and whatever, whereas Shlomo ruled based on his chokhmah. So therefore, he doesn't belong in the same category as Achav and the rest of them. Next, Rahav Sancheirev. What about Sancheirev? When he's besieging Yerushalayim, he has Rav Shekei announced, Mi b'chol olakeha rata sa'ela, who is there among all the gods of these nations, of these countries, asher yitzilu et artem yadi, who saved their lands from my power. So you see, he conquered the whole world. And there is, he didn't. Hariku Yerushalayim, Dalai Kavsha. The one holdout, Yerushalayim, he didn't conquer it. So you can't say he ruled over the whole known world. No, he didn't destroy Yerushalayim. That's the Nebuchadnezzar. You think of this Sennacherib 100 years earlier. Sennacherib's army ended up getting killed outside the gates of Yerushalayim. They were killed in a plague. That's one of the things that happened Pesach night. And that's it. Sennacherib himself survived. A couple of other members of his army did. Gemara in Sanhedrin discusses exactly how many. He eventually got assassinated by two of his sons, and that was the end of him.
Yeah.
But he never ended up ruling over everything, because he never managed to capture Yerushalayim. Well, that's just because he still was a king afterwards. He still did rule over his whole empire. We don't find that he lost his empire. Everybody was mad at him, the Gemara says, but they didn't rebel against him. Next, Va'ikar Daryavesh, how about a third candidate for a ruler over the whole world? Daryavesh. This is the first Daryavesh we're going to talk soon. There were two Daryavishes. There was the first one who conquered the kingdom of Babel, and then there was the second one who was the son of Achshverosh and Esther. So the first Daryavesh, Dichtiv, after the story of Daniel being thrown into the lion's den, Daryavesh is very impressed by the Avish's power, that he saved Daniel from the lions. And the Pasuk says, Daryavesh Malka Kosov L'cholam Amaya, Umaya V'lishnaya. Daryavesh the king wrote to all the nations, all the peoples, and all the languages, Didarin B'chol Ara, that live in the whole world, Shlomchon Yiske, he says, may your peace increase, and he goes on to tell them about this nest that happened, and you all have to respect the Jewish God. So he's writing to the whole world, the Pashas, he ruled over them. The answer is, Ha'ikasheva, the Malach Halayu. After all, there are seven countries he didn't rule over. Dichtiv, because you have earlier in that parak, Shvar Kadam Daryavesh, it was good in Daryavesh's eyes, V'Hakim Al-Machusa, he appointed over his kingdom, L'Achashepanayim, Mayor of Esrin, he appointed 120 governors over his empire, one governor for each province, so he's 120, not 127. He's missing seven. And he wrote to those seven, Marsha says, but he wrote to them like he's writing to them, I want to tell you about what happened, but not writing to them as I'm your emperor and therefore you better do this, but rather, here's something interesting that happened in my empire which I'd like you to know about. Before, by the way, going back to when we were talking about Ahasuerus, when we said that he ruled over 127 and that's the whole world, the truth is there are Midrashim that argue with that. There is a Midrash that says that on the contrary, there is a Midrash that says that actually there were 250 some countries in the world, but many of them broke away, many of them rebelled against Ahasuerus and then broke away. So according to that, it would mean that at one time Ahasuerus did rule over the whole world, but then he lost part of his kingdom. On the other hand, kind of says it the other way around. Pirkei Rabbi Elazar says that originally Achashverosh ruled over 116 provinces, and then after he married Esther, he conquered another 11. So that brought him up to 127. That's what he said before, that his kingdom grew. Yeah. Next, the last one, Va'ikar Koresh. What about Koresh? Dichtiv, Koyama Koresh Melech Parah, so says Koresh, the king of Persia, Kol Mam L'chayt Ha'Earth Nasam L'Hashem. Hashem has given me all the kingdoms of the earth. And this is an introduction to he's saying that the Eibishter has commanded me to rebuild the Bismikdash, so anybody who wants to go to rebuild the Bismikdash can do so. So you see, he ruled over the whole world. The answer is, Hasam Ishtabuchi Hodekab Ishtabach Benafshe. There it's not, he didn't really rule over the whole world. He's just exaggerating in his own benefit, which Rabbi Yaakov Emden says. I mean, so what, the Pasuk is quoting an exaggeration of his? What's the point of that? So the Rabbi Yaakov Emden explains, based on what we're going to learn tomorrow, that Kodesh didn't carry out everything he was supposed to. The Eibishter expected that Kodesh himself is going to be involved in building this Mikdash. Instead, all he did is he announced, anybody who wants to go, go ahead. I'll give you money or whatever, but I'm not going to get personally involved myself. So therefore, yes, if he had done what he was supposed to do, then Yitzhak would have had Kol Mam L'Chayt Ha'aretz. Like this, he never ended up living up to that, so therefore Yitzhak never ended up ruling over the whole world.
He
praised himself right now. Yeah. He was jumping the gun, kind of, according to this explanation. Yeah. Next. Pasuk says, going back to Megillah Esther, by Yom Mahim, in those days, Keshevas HaMelech, when the king sat on his throne, so it sounds like as soon as he became king is when he made this party. Uchtiv Basre, but the Pasuk continues, Vishnas Sholosh Lamacha, in the third year of his reign. So what is it, when he became king, or in the third year? Amar Rava, my Keshevas, what does it mean, Keshevas? La'achash Nisyashva Daito, it means after Keshevas, Melosh Nisyashva, after his mind was put at ease, after his mind was settled. We have to explain as background a little bit about the history of that time, and I prepared a little chart over here, probably should have made more copies of it, to explain what's going on over here. Yirmiyahu, during the time when the first Bismikdash was still standing, Yirmiyahu had said a number of times in Nevuah that there's going to be a 70-year period. He spoke of that there was going to be a 70, that the kingdom of Babel was going to last for 70 years, and he talked about that the Golos was going to last for 70 years. So nobody really was sure when those 70 years begin and end, and there were a few possibilities, as the Gemara is going to go through now. One possibility is it begins from when Nebuchadnezzar became king. The Gemara is going to establish soon. Nebuchadnezzar was king for 45 years. His son Evel Meroidach was king for 23, and his son Belshazzar was king for 3 years, or 2 years, a part of a third, whatever. So that's one way of looking at it. Is that already adds up to 70 years? As the Gemara is going to go through, Belshazzar figured then in that case that's the 70 years, nothing's happening, I'm safe, and that's when he made his party and used the Kalim of the Bismikdash, and he got killed. Obviously, that was a wrong time to start from. The next possibility is, okay, maybe you don't begin from when Nebuchadnezzar became king, you begin from when Nebuchadnezzar conquered out Israel, which was in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. Fine, so you have to have 1 year later. So 1 year later, Belshazzar is dead already, the Yavesh took over and then ruled for about a year and then also died. Koresh came along then, and that's when Koresh proclaimed that the Jews can return to Eretz Yisrael. 70 years after Nebuchadnezzar started ruling over Eretz Yisrael, you have this Kedah Ba'alma, the Gemara calls it tomorrow's day, but she remembered them and showed them a sign that the Geula is coming. But still, they started building the Bismikdash, and they ended up having to stop it because of the accusations. Next thing, the next possible waypoint they could have been counting from is the first galus of the Jewish people. The first galus was the first galus Yechonia. The Nebuchadnezzar invaded out Israel, took the king Yechonia and a bunch of the Talmid Chachamim prisoner and brought them to Babel. That was the first wave of galus. That happened 11 years before the Churban. That happened in the eighth year of Nebuchadnezzar. It was the eighth year of Nebuchadnezzar. It was the seventh year since he had conquered out Israel. So maybe you begin from then. Ahasuerus figured to count from then. He counted 70 years, came up to the third year of his reign. Now he figures, then that's it. That's it. The 70 years aren't going to happen, and that's when he made his party. And as the Gemara was going to say, even that turned out to be wrong. So now with that introduction, what was the final thing? The final thing was that you had to count from the Churban. The Churban was 11 years later, so therefore 11 years later is when Dariavash, the second Dariavash, actually gave permission to rebuild the Bismikdash. The second Dariavash, the son of Ahasuerus and Esther. Yeah. So, right now, in Ahasuerus' third year, he's feeling more at ease. Omar, he figures like this. Belshazzar Choshevatal. Belshazzar figured out when the Geula is going to take place, and he made a mistake. I'm going to make a calculation, and I'm not going to make a mistake. Maihi, what was this calculation? Dichtiv, the pasuk says, Ki lefi meloyt the Babel shivim shana efkid eschem. And Yirmiyo had said, when for Babel there are filled up 70 years, I will remember you, which sounds like it means that they will be taken out of Golos and the Bismikdash will be built. Uchtiv, but another pasuk says, Lamalis lechorvis Yerushalayim shivim shana. But it also says that there had to be filled up for the destruction of Yerushalayim 70 years. Ahasuerus kind of ignored the second pasuk. Actually, the Rashash said we shouldn't have ignored it in the Gemara over here. He focused on the first one, that it has to be from Babel 70 years. Let's go back to Belshazzar. What did he do? And anybody who wants can look over the table over here to see the years. Chashoyv aboyin v'chomish v'chanetzah. You calculate like this. V'chanetzah ruled for 45 years. The Esrin atzlas to Evel Meroidach. His son Evel Meroidach ruled for 23 years, so that brings 68. First, we're going to figure out what Belshazzar, why Belshazzar figured, where he figured the 70 years begin and end, and what he did. Yeah. So we start with Nebuchadnezzar ruled for 45 years. Evel Meroidach, his son, ruled for 23 years. That makes 68. V'tauti didei, 2 years of Belshazzar, that makes 70. Halshivim. He figured, 2 years of my reign have passed, that's it. There's been no Pekidah, there's been no Geula, that's it. Nothing's going to happen. Afik money to Bay Makdisha, so he took out the Kalim of the Bismikdash, the Ishtamish, but when he used them at his party. And that's the party when the handwriting wrote on the wall, and Naaman ate Caleb Irisin, and Daniel comes and gives him a whole Musa Shmuz telling him what a chutzpah yak you were towards the Eibishter, and sure enough, that night he was killed by Dariavash.
Who invaded?
The Persians and the Medians together, part of the Mada, invaded Babel and conquered it, and Dariavash became the new king.
That very night.
That's a different medrash that says Belshazzar was killed. Whatever it is, the pasuk just says Babylonia called to Belshazzar Malka. Just says that night Belshazzar was killed. Doesn't actually say who killed him. Whatever, he was killed. That's the end of him. Now, How do we know that the Machanetza ruled for 45 years? The Amamar, we learn in a Braisa, Golu B'Sheva, Golu B'Shmoina, the Jewish people went into Golos in the 7th year and in the 8th year. Golu B'Shmoina, Esther, Golu B'Chasre, they went into Golos in the 18th year and in the 19th year. Now, the Gemara explains in Erchin, the reason why the Gemara is putting it this way is because we have Psukim in Melachim that mention the 8th year and the 19th year, and we have Psukim in Yumio that mention the 7th year and the 18th year. So it sounds like we're talking 4 different Golosim. So the Gemara explains that, no, that's not what it means. It means, Golo B'Sheva L'Kibosh Yehoyakim, Golos Yehoyakim, it means that in the 7th year since the Nebuchadnezzar had conquered and subjugated Yehoyakim, the king of Yehuda, 7 years after that was the Golos of Yehoyakim, his son, Shehi Shmoinu L'Nebuchadnezzar, which is the 8th year of Nebuchadnezzar, because Nebuchadnezzar had become king 1 year before he conquered Eretz Yisrael and subjugated Yehoyakim. Golub Shmoinah Esther, the Kibosh Yehoyakim, Golub Tifkiyahu, and then they went again into Golus in the 18th year of from when Yehoyakim had been conquered, which is the Golus of Tifkiyahu, Shu Chai Israel and Nebuchadnezzar, which is the 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar. On the table over here, you can see that you have the Golus in Nebuchadnezzar's 8th year, which is the one pasuk calls it the 8th year because that's what it was of his reign. The other one calls it the 7th year because it's the 7th year of his reign over Eretz Yisrael, his overlordship over Eretz Yisrael. And then the second one, when Tzidkiyahu was taken to this mitzvah, was destroyed, was in the 18th year since the Nebuchadnezzar had conquered Eretz Yisrael, and the 19th since he had become king. The Amamar, because we learn in a Braisa, the Shana Rishana Kibish Nineveh, the first year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, he conquered Nineveh, he conquered Asher, which had been the previous superpower. Shniya Kibish Yehoyakim, the second year he conquered Yehoyakim and made him his vassal and made him subject to him. So far we have by the time Nebuchadnezzar had conquered had taken Yehoniah into Golos, which is the first Golos, it was his 8th year. So we have 8 years so far, and the pasuk says, "Vayhi b'shloishim b'sheva shana l'golos Yehoyakim melech Yehuda." In the 37th year of the golos of Yehoyakim, the king of Yehuda, shnei masach chodesh, in the 12th month in Adar, be'esrim v'chamish al chodesh, on the 25th of the month, nasa evel merodach melech Bavel b'shnas machoshe be'esrim Yehoyakim melech Yehuda. Then evel merodach, the new king of Bavel, as soon as he became king, lifted up the head of Yehoniah, of Yehoyakim, the king of Yehuda, v'yotzei esrim v'etakele, and he took him out of jail. So Yehoyakim had been in jail for 37 years now. So, Tzmani, the 12th and the 7th, had Abba and B'chomish, Nebuchadnezzar. So you have 8 years until he captured Yehoniah, 37 years that Yehoniah is in jail until Nebuchadnezzar dies and Evel Merodach takes him out of jail, makes 45. So there we have Nebuchadnezzar ruled for 45 years. Next, Evel Merodach, the Esther of class to Evel Merodach, 23 years that Evel Merodach ruled, that is Gemara, that we know of Kabbalah. The Tauti today, and 2 years of Belshazzar, 2 full years of Belshazzar. He made this party of his in his 3rd year, Hashimin. So that reaches 7 years. Omar, so Belshazzar figured, Hashtabade Tula Mifriki. Well, now the Jewish people are certainly not going to be redeemed from Golos. Therefore, Apik Mani, the Bimak Beshavish Tamash Bahu, and therefore he took out the Kalim of the Bismikdash and used them in his party. Heiner to call Malay Daniel. So this is why Daniel tells him, when they called in Daniel to explain the writing on the wall, Daniel tells him, what a chutzpah, Val Morish Shmaya Hishramta, against the master of the heavens, meaning Hashem, you raised yourself up. Ulmanaya di Baitse Haisiv Kadamach, the Kalim of his house that you had brought in front of you, and you and all the members of your court were drinking out of them. Uchtiv, and the pasuk says, Bay below, you're called to Belshazzar Malka Kasdai. On that night, Belshazzar, the king of the Kastim, was killed. Uchtiv, what?
Yeah, the
Belshazzar was 2 years and part of a 3rd year. Yeah. And then, Uchtiv, and then the pasuk says, V'Daryavash Madar, Kabal Malchusa, Kabar Shinin Shitin Vitaut. And then the pasuk continues that Daryavash, the Daryavash from Madai, part of the Madai together at conquered Babel, so they appointed Daryavash, the new king, he became the king at the age of 62. Rashi on the pasuk over there actually points out the significance of that. Daryavash was born the same time when Nebuchadnezzar conquered, when Nebuchadnezzar took Yehoyakim off into Golos. Because if you have 45 plus 23 plus 37 from Yehoniah's Golos till Nebuchadnezzar died, and another 23 and another 2, that brings you to 62. So Daryavash was born on the same day that his nemesis Nebuchadnezzar had invaded Eretz Yisrael. He succeeded to Nebuchadnezzar's empire, yeah. So you have, so this is Achashverosh thinking to himself about what happened in recent years. So what happened? Belshazzar, he says, made a mistake. Almost, so he figures, Iu mitatoi. He made a mistake, obviously, because he got killed. Whereas I'm going to recalculate and I'm not going to make a mistake. Why? The Pasuk never said anything about that there's going to be 70 years of the kingdom of Babel as a whole, meaning you don't count 70 years from when Nebuchadnezzar became king. You have to count the Babel there. You have to count from Babel. What does that mean? My Babel? The Golos Babel. You have to figure from the first Golos that Babel took Jews into exile. Kama b'tzir and tzmani. How much are you missing? 8. Because in Nebuchadnezzar's 8th year, we said, is when the first Golos happened. So in other words, it has to be 8 years after Belshazzar figured. So, choshev ayol chilufayr. So you have to figure out instead. Chodah de Belshazzar, one more year of Belshazzar, because he had 2 years up to that point, and then he had in his third year when he made the party. That's one. V'chomesh Daryavash v'Kurdish, and 5 more between Daryavash and Kurdish. At this point, the Gemara is assuming that between Daryavash and Kurdish, they ruled for 5 years. Metauti didei, and 2 of Achashverosh's own. Hoshivim. So now you have 70. Or a different way of looking at it is if Daryavash was 62 when he became king, and between Daryavash and between Daryavash and Kurdish you have 5 years, so that brings us up to 67, then at the beginning of Achashverosh's 3rd year, at the beginning of the 7th year. Kivin dechazi demalo shivin v'lo yifruk, he sees 70 years finished and they haven't been redeemed. Omahashtabade tula mifriki, he says now for sure they won't be redeemed. Apik money de bimakdisha, so he brought out the kalim of the bismikdash again. The ishtamish behu, and he used them by his party. The kalim shoinim is the kalim of the bismikdash. This time, both sotan v'rikid b'nehem, this time the sotan came and danced among them and it was called trouble. V'horegas Vashti, and Vashti ended up getting killed. Why Vashti? Why not Achashverosh himself? A couple of different ideas that Mephoshim give. One of them is, in a way, Achashverosh was just following in Belshazzar's footsteps. Like, you can't, the real blame goes on Belshazzar, who was the first one to have such chutzpah. So the punishment was appropriate. Vashti is Belshazzar's daughter and Achashverosh's wife. So that way both of them ended up suffering for it. Another idea some Mephoshim say is David should have to keep Achashverosh alive because his son, Daryavash, is going to be the one to announce that the Bismuth that can be rebuilt. Daryavash, whether he's Jewish, we'll get to in the next couple of days. Yeah. Why? It seems that Achashverosh made a right calculation. What's the problem? Not what's the problem. Why use the kalim of the bismikdash? But where did he go wrong in his calculation? Because Iunami mitatoi, because he was also making a mistake. He should have counted from the destruction of Yerushalayim, which is 11 years later. Instead of counting from Yechoniah's Golos, which was 11 years before the Churban, he should have counted from the actual Churban, which was in Nebuchadnezzar's 19th year, not his 8th year. Okay, then after all, if you look at it that way, how many years are you missing? You're missing 11 years. How long did Achashverosh rule? 14 years. Rashi says, because we find that in Achashverosh's 12th year is when Haman was promoted and made his Xeris. The following year, the 13th year, is when the Jews defeated their enemies and they celebrated Purim. The year after that, it says they sent out a Geras HaPurim Azos HaShenis to confirm that Purim has to be established as a Yom Tov. That was the 14th year. We don't hear of any later year of Achashverosh. So the Lloyd Bach custom list of Melel Farish, if the Torah doesn't specify, we assume the Torah is telling us, we assume the Torah wants us to know that was the last year. So that's it, the 14th year is the last year of Achashverosh. But according to that, if in the 3rd year he made his party, because he thought 70 years are over, really he's supposed to count from 11 years later, fine, it means that at the time of his party, only 59 years have passed since the Churban. Fine, 11 years later is 70 years. So the Bismuth should have been rebuilt in Achashverosh's 14th year, his last year. So why does the Pasuk say that the work on the Bismikdash was suspended until the 2nd year of Daryavash, 2 years after Achashverosh died? Where do those 2 years come from? The Rabbah says because we're talking about partial years. When we said, for example, before that Nebuchadnezzar ruled for 45 years, it doesn't mean 45 years, it means 44 and a half years. When we say Evel Merodach ruled for 23 years, same thing, doesn't mean 23 full years, it means 22 and a half years. Altogether, between the different fractional years, you come out of there, you're missing a couple of years. Again, if you want to look on my paper afterwards, you can see I wrote down the details according to the way Rashi explained them. Yeah, we'll just finish the one line over here. Tani Nami Hachi. We learn similar in the Braisa. V'ot Shana Acheres L'Bavel. Really, Bavel should have had one more year. V'ama Dayavesh V'Shlema. Dayavesh ended up filling it out. In other words, when Belshazzar made his party, he was right. It was 70 years since Nebuchadnezzar had become king, but it was only 69 years since Nebuchadnezzar had conquered Eretz Yisrael, which is what the 70 years are supposed to count from. So when so there was one more year that Bavel should have been destined to rule over the Jewish people. Because of Belshazzar's chutzpah, he got killed, and Dariush ended up making up that missing year. But therefore we see from that that there's fractional years involved. You already see that when Belshazzar was figuring before 45, 23, and 2, he should have been figuring 44 and a half, 22 and a half, and 2.
Oh, that's rounding?
Yeah, that's what it is, rounding. And then tomorrow we'll continue the rest of the on that.